welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for August 6th. It's brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, and sitting in this week is special guest co-host Michael Westbay. What's happening, guy?
Hey, not a whole heck of a lot. Hope you're staying cool in this extreme heat.
I love it. I love the heat. I went jogging this morning. I just about died. I had to stop maybe three times to get through it, but I went running this morning and felt really good.
Always bring a lot of water.
Always carry some water and some money just in case.
Vending machines everywhere.
There are. I'm so lucky. This week we've got a chat with Chris Carter of the Cebu Lions. We're going to discuss the Pacific League and the Central League and chat about some more numbers. So let's get started by clearing the bases. All right, so I got to sit down with Chris Carter of the Cebu Lions on Monday. I went out to Cebu Dome, and what a great guy. He's a really good guy.
Yeah, he does. He sounds like a really nice, humble guy.
Yeah, he's from Northern California, which it's too bad Jim's not on the show this week because Jim's from Northern California. So would have been nice, but he's a Stanford grad. He's born in Fremont, California. And for me, being from Southern California, I was raised there most of my life. Anything to do with Northern California, we're automatically, we're fighting with each other. And it's not the case with me and Jim. We seem to get along really well. But Stanford is one school I just don't like. I'm a USC fan. I would even root for UCLA when it comes to Stanford. And I went to Cal State Fullerton. And Cal State Fullerton is a baseball school. You probably don't know. But every time it gets to the regionals and the College World Series, we end up having to battle it out with schools like USC, UCLA, and Stanford. And Stanford just used to beat our brains out when, you know, if we just didn't have to play Stanford, we'd be fine. We always had to play Stanford, and they always knocked us out. And there's some other, you know, medium-sized schools. Maybe you would call them like mid-majors, like Long Beach State.
Well, my alma mater, San Diego State, while I was there, was invisible school so far as baseball was concerned. But since Tony Gwynn took over the baseball team, they've been doing pretty well, it seems.
Yeah, he has been really good for that program, really good for the city of San Diego in baseball ever since he went there to play. So, I have noticed that. And, you know, his son's playing with the Dodgers, and I always say, man, you need to change your name, man, because you're just not living up to your
The first time I saw Tony Gwynn on the Los Angeles Dodgers, I did a double take. What are you? That's not where he belongs.
Well, and it seems like Chris Carter belongs here in Japan because, you know, he was once traded. He was the player to be named later in a trade involving Willie Mo Pena, who is now with the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks, and they both came here this season. Isn't that amazing?
That is. It's a small world when it comes to people coming from the majors to Japan, it seems. Yeah. Everybody seems to know everybody.
Yeah, or they played with some of the players, faced them, or been involved with a trade with them. So anyway, let's go ahead and take a listen to Chris Carter's chat.
With Chris Carter of the Cebu Lions, he's up and playing with the Lions, and the Lions are starting to do well now. Tell us how you ended up with this team, Chris.
You know, I got a call in the off season from a couple Japanese baseball teams, and the Lions gave me a great opportunity, and I said yes, and I came here.
You started out on the farm. Tell us what that was like in terms of experience for you and why you started out on the farm.
You know, I came here and I was hurting, and I ended up needing surgery. And I had surgery here in Japan, and actually in Tokyo, and my knee, my right knee. And so I started on the farm, kind of a rehab. And it took a while. It really did. It took about 3 months to get better. And the Japanese therapy and the Japanese rehab was tremendous. It was very thorough. It got me back better, and I feel better than ever right now.
Now, I'm not sure exactly what the correlation is, but since you've come up, the Lions have been winning more regularly. what's going on with that?
You know, I like to take some credit, but...
I'll give you some.
Thank you. But our team's been playing great. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, everything's been going our way, defense, pitching, hitting, and when we need those timely hits, we've been getting them. So, you know, maybe I kind of just added a little to the ambiance, but for the most part, it's been my teammates carrying it.
Now, you said a couple teams were interested in you and you ended up coming here, but who has been the resource, who has actually gotten you into getting used to the pitching and all that kind of stuff?
You know, it's been a lot because I've been through different stages here. One was a rehab stage, and that was a trainer named Yoneda-san that got me back. And then getting acclimated to the pitchers here, it's actually a Hall of Fame Japanese player by the name of Doi-san.
Mm-hmm.
And
gray-haired man?
Great. He's been amazing. And I don't know if you've ever seen that movie, Mr. Baseball, but the manager kind of pulls the player aside and teaches him some stuff, and that's what Doi-san's done to me, and I've been so appreciative of that. And, you know, when I was playing, I was hitting close to 400, and, I have him to thank for sure.
Is it a lot like relearning your craft when you come over here?
It's different. It's a different game. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people comment on it. You know, the strike zone's different. The style of pitching is different. You have to relearn some things, but your basic tools, your basic foundation for hitting, you can keep. But then those specifics, you have to change to be successful here.
That's a long season, and I know you weren't up here for the horrendous start that the Lions had, and there were fans fighting to get off of the bandwagon, and now they're looking to beat each other to get back on. How do you like your playoff chances at this point in the season?
You know, I watched every game on TV, and it was so bad. We would find a way to lose. Now we're just winning everything. And, God, I don't... From what I've seen, I don't think there's a team that can beat us in a series right now. That's how confident I feel, and I can easily say that with 100% confidence. That's how good we're playing right now.
What about Hiroyuki Nakajima, the shortstop? He's been playing well. Obviously, he should have been in the States by now. He had to come back in the offseason. What do you think of him as a player?
I think he's an amazing, talented player. And he's extremely, extremely intelligent, too. So I think when he does go to the States, I think his intelligence is going to help, you know, his tools and his ability to learn and adapt is going to make him very successful in the United States. I'm excited to see what he can do, not just here, but, you know, in the future.
Now, what about for you going forward? What do you have to do to get on the field a little bit more regularly?
You know, unfortunately, we had an injury to one of our star players, Nakamura. And he can only DH right now. He has a bad shoulder and a bad knee. And so it's kind of day-to-day with him. If he gets better, then they'll move him to defense, and I'll be the DH. If he doesn't get better, it looks like they'll have to put him on the DL, and I'll DH. So right now I just have to keep working hard and be ready for my opportunity when it comes.
Now, there's a lot of baseball left to play. What are you guys thinking about a first-place run here?
God, I would love that. You know, I'd love to get that first-place spot. Have a little insurance going into the playoffs. But, you know, baseball's a humbling game. So, you know, I know 2 seconds ago I said I was 100% confident. You know, but baseball's such a humbling game, it might come around to bite me. So the way we've been playing is great. I feel like, you know, that's our spot to win. But, again, baseball, it can change on a dime.
All right, buddy. Well, good luck. We appreciate you sitting down and talking to us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Well, we appreciate you sitting down to talk with us, Chris. Thank you very much once again.
Thank you much. That was very interesting.
Yeah. What caught
I enjoyed
you,
it.
What caught your ear there?
Well, first of all, he arrived here, and the first thing he did was have surgery in Tokyo.
Yeah.
Most of the foreign players, they refuse to have any kind of work done to them here in Japan and go to the States.
Do you blame them?
Well, I've never had any problem, and in fact, I've kind of liked the...
Well, wait a minute. How many surgeries have you had?
Zero.
Okay. I was gambling that was the answer.
But then the whole way the health system is set up, they pretty much require you to have scheduled maintenance every year. Once you're 30 or 35, you're supposed to go in and see a doctor every year. The company pays for it, or the government pays for it. It's all very cheap. So you're definitely getting all of the maintenance that you need to make sure that you are healthy.
Yeah, I understand that part, but they're not cutting you open, man. They're not knifing you.
My wife had two surgeries here.
Uh-huh.
When both kids were born, they were done cesarean, and they required her to stay in the hospital for a week after the birth of each child. In America, they send you out that day.
Yeah, they try to push you out in America. I know the situation.
And my wife was just itching to get out of the hospital.
Right.
So
right.
They were kind of overly coddling, according to her. So it's just interesting that he first gets here and the first thing he does is have surgery.
Yeah, I see that. And I asked him, I didn't ask him, actually, but I noticed that he's not walking smoothly. Now, I don't know. You know, he hasn't played in the field this year, and he talked about in the interview, he said, until they know what's happening with Nakamura, that he's not going to be doing anything
right.
but pinch hitting. Basically, he's going to be the DH. I think he's not 100% in terms of playing in the field. He can play first base. He's played the outfield before in the majors and in the minors. But I don't see that happening still. Like I said, I don't think he's 100%. But that's just me looking at him move. I could be wrong because it was the first time I really got a chance to see him. And he had a pinch hit that day to a pinch hit single that day to win the help the Lions win the game that day. He still didn't look right to me. He didn't look right to me. But yeah, usually we get players who say, "Hey, look, you're going to cut. You're not cutting on me. I'm going home. I'm going back to the States. Get away from me with that knife."
Well, more than the doctor's competency level or anything like that, I think that a big part of it is the language. You want to talk to a doctor who you can definitely communicate with. And of all of the potential problems, that's what I see as the biggest. Most of the doctors that we've seen here, they studied in the U.S. Go to conferences in the U.S. and other things. So the doctor levels are competent. But do you really want to trust that your doctor knows, really understands the problem if you can't communicate? That is what I see as the biggest issue.
Yeah, and I think it's just fear. It's fear of the unknown. They don't know how, once we've been over here for 20 plus years, we know how to at least communicate what we want to do, but we know what the doctors are doing, and I think they have no idea if the doctors are competent or not. And it's just a trust factor. I don't think they can feel that way without having been here for a long time. And even some people who've been here for a long time don't want to go to the doctors. And I think it's different when you have them cut. If they're just treating you and there's a problem, there's an injury or something, then you can be treated. But if they talk about surgery and something, I would even wonder about whether I should go home to do it. Of course, you don't have insurance. But anyway, Chris was a great chat. He talked about how good the team is.
He was very humble. He kind of knows his position is a pinch hitting role for right now. He may be promoted to DH if Okawadikun does go on the DL.
Well, I don't think it would be a promotion per se. I think he'd move into that role because it's just not available right now.
Right.
That's what he would be doing if it were available. But they didn't anticipate the injury to Okawadikun.
But he is very humble, which is really good for, blending in and working with the team. So that's a really good sign for him that he may have a good career here.
Yeah, and, I looked at some of the numbers he had in the States, in the minors and in the majors, and he hits some home runs. He hits with some pop. He's got a good on-base percentage, which, it told me that he is selective at the plate.
Mm-hmm. Good eye.
Yeah, he walks a lot. And the bats that I've seen so far, save for that first at bat, because I think I talked about it on the show where he was so intense. And he's kind of an intense guy. He looks like the intensity factor, not just the fear factor, but the intensity factor is he's storming around getting ready to hit. But he does seem to be selective at the plate, and he swings at, he's gotten a couple of hits recently in some of these pinch hitting roles. Not the cleanest of hits. Not the greatest of, not the hardest of hits, but he's gotten the ball out of the infield and in front of the outfield, and that's good enough. And he knows what strikes are. He knows the strike zone. And he talked about Masahiro Doi, the coach he was talking about.
That was another big thing that came up.
But, yeah, Doi-san, he said he was a Hall of Famer, and I couldn't find him on the list of Hall of Famers, so I'm not sure where he got that information. Maybe I overlooked it, maybe not, but... I expect, a lot of foreigners come over and the first thing they say is they latch on to another foreigner on the team. whether it's a pitcher or just somebody who's got some experience. And, you know, Jose Ortiz, who just got there, is there, and Esteban Herman has been there all season. You think that he would be talking to those guys, and those guys would be working with him to get him going. But
when you ask a question, that's what I expected to hear as an answer. So when he replied that it was Doi coach, that's something different.
Yeah, and you usually, I mean, certainly these Japanese coaches, that's what they're paid to do, and they're supposed to be out there helping these foreign players. But it sounds like he's really working closely with them, which I don't remember. I mean, you know, we talked with Bobby Scales actually when you were on the show about a year ago. And it sounded like nobody was really working with him per se, that he was just trying to figure things out for himself. And, of course, Micah Hoffpower was up there.
If I remember that Scales interview correctly, he wasn't going to take any coach's advice anyway.
No, I don't think he's put it quite that way. I know that you didn't like
it. It wasn't quite. That's not quite the words he used, but that's the impression I had.
The impression I had was, you know, he knows how to play baseball and he knows how to get ready and he has his own routines and all that other stuff. And he's going to work within the confines of the team, but he wanted to play his own style as well. So that's probably why he didn't come back with the Ipoham Finals this year. He came back with a different team. But anyway, you expect to hear guys talking about how these other foreigners are helping him through, and that wasn't the case. And it was good, you know, to hear that Doi is doing that work with him. I was really happy to hear that. Right.
And again, that's the second big clue that he may be here for a while. He's certainly got a chance at having a good career here.
Yeah, and that's, of course, what is more important than having some success here when you come here? It's really hard to get used to. And I, you know, I've asked a lot of questions this season because I think we've done more interviews this season on the podcast than we did last season. And
yeah, there's been one every podcast, hasn't there?
Almost every podcast.
Or except last week?
Yeah, almost every podcast. And then, player interviews, right? Because you were on the last week. Yeah, and it's, you know, I don't want to ask the same questions all the time, but it is an adjustment period and trying to forget what you learn and relearn. I tried to ask the same question a different way, you know, what have you had to relearn? and he said he's got the same basics and everything. He just has to make some adjustments, and he's still in that process. But like I said,
stick with the fundamentals and build on them.
Yeah, it is coincidence. I think it's total coincidence. But as of Thursday night's games of last week, the team was 17-9-5 since Carter's first game. They won a lot since he's been.
A big coincidence. Yeah, I remember the Bay Stars had a better record than they did at one point.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's all changed. But certainly, you know, he's contributed to a couple of wins here and there. But he might have changed the attitude. He might have gotten guys to, you know, look, we see this guy storming around in the dugout before he's going to take one at bat, and we've got four. You know, technically, you think you have four at bats when you get a start. Maybe we should take our at-bats a little bit more seriously or try not to give as many away or try to work the count or do something. Maybe he has rubbed off in that respect on the team. Other than that, I can't see where he's actually helped to contribute to more than a couple of wins here and there.
Well, there was one more point that he made that I thought really, really makes him fit in well here in Japan.
That's right.
And that was he watched every game while he was still on the farm.
I was kind of impressed with that.
You know, we've heard of people like Mitchell who are out in bars while the team is down the street.
Who's that,
playing
Kevin Mitchell?
Yeah, Kevin Mitchell.
Oh, we have a cat like another famous podcast that I know. Yeah, I mean, there are players who, when they're not on the first team, they're really not worried about what's going on up there because they're more focused on how to get back and take care of themselves. But, yeah, I was surprised by that, and I didn't ask him about it, but I thought, well, he's a high-intensity guy. He must have been going nuts watching those games, too, because they were losing every day just about.
The question that I wanted to ask after hearing all of this was, is he living in the player dormitory while he's – or at least while he's at Nigoon?
As far as I know, the foreign players have certain housing. It's all set up. Tanashi is one of the places that they have housing. and Higashikurume is one of the places that they have housing. Mm-hmm. And I think they just have those, they just put the same players, you know, when one moves out, they just move the next one in for the year. For the season.
Uh-huh.
So they all live in the same area or same two areas. And they take the trains together to go into games and everything. So if you get there early enough, you might be riding on a train with, you know, Randy Williams or Chris Carter or somebody.
Yeah, I've seen many people post things on the internet. Look who I saw on the train.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially going out to Tokorozawa.
I remember Craig Brazell was very, very perturbed at a Japanese man who made a comment about his wife when they were riding the train together to go to a game. So it's not always pleasant.
Okay.
And any time that I go out there, my hair is cut real short. And, of course, I'm going out there as a reporter, but people stare at me and they break out their baseball guidebooks and start looking through them to see if you figure out which player they think they think they're looking at. And I don't even resemble a baseball player, for goodness sake. Yeah, I guess I'm just not Japanese, so I stand out a lot. So, but anyway, the Lions have been making a strong run recently. They got to within 1.5 games of the top spot. I can't even believe after that dreadful start they got to 1.5 games out of the top spot. But that says two things to me. One, that they did have a good stretch.
Mm-hmm.
The other says that the top teams have fallen back to them, and that is the case.
And even if you go back to the 1990s, I had one rule when predicting the Pacific League. Never count the Lions out, because the Lions are always going to be in A-class.
Meaning top three teams.
Yeah, top three. They've kind of missed that a few times in the last 10 years, but it's very rare that that's going to happen. So.
No, I think a couple years ago when they didn't finish in the top three was the first time in 25 years that they hadn't done it. So, yeah, they compete. They field a good team, and if they do nothing, they finish in the top three, normally.
Yep, that's a pretty good bet.
And, you know, we want to credit the guys who have helped them do this, and, of course, Hiroyuki Nakajima, my choice for the player of the month for July, stood out because he had been on a tear, you know, but the other guys picked it up, too, especially their starting pitching.
The pitching, yeah.
Enrique Gonzalez went into the rotation. Because he was awful as out of the bullpen. He was just awful. And mm-hmm. I didn't get a chance when I went out there Monday. I only talked to Chris Carter, and I talked to a couple of Japanese players, and then the game started. But I didn't get a chance to ask them why they made that switch and how he's been a little bit more successful. He hasn't gone more than five innings, I don't think, but he is contributing. They've won two of the three games that he has started.
Mm-hmm.
Kazuhisa Makita. They've won two of his three starts in this run. The unheralded Yoma Nogami has won three straight decisions. Takayuki Kishi has won three of four starts.
Kishi.
And then Kazuhisa Ishii is himself. He's not great. He's not bad. Sometimes he's really good. But he only made two starts.
He was just sent down to the farm this past week. But, yeah, he's also been throwing really, really well.
Well, I mean, he's just inconsistent. I mean, if you ask Jim Allen.
He's always been that.
He just doesn't have any heart. You know, if he puts his mind to it, he can be better. If not, whatever. But I think.
With Ishii, my view of Ishii is the more wild he's throwing, the more strikeouts he's going to get. Of course, he's also going to walk more, let more runners on base, and that may hurt him eventually. But, man, he's going to get a lot of strikeouts when he's really wild. Because nobody knows where the ball's going.
Well, you know, they just gotten better starting pitching. When that starting pitching started to straighten out for them, I mean, some guys hit well. Don't get me wrong. Led by Nakajima, Nakajima was great. But, you know, he can't do it alone. He can only carry him so far, and it's just like we saw some games on Sunday where if you don't get the run support or you don't take the advantage of some opportunities that present themselves in games, you lose the flow and then you end up losing the game. And I think another important aspect is that Hideaki Wakui, the former ace starter, has stabilized the back of that bullpen, which was unstable, you know, from the beginning. Gonzalez was back there. And Randy Williams took a turn at closer, and they've just been throwing people back there and trying to get pieced together some innings here and there. But he has – I don't know if he's going to stay in this role or how long he might do it, but I think looks like for the time being and for this year at least. And again, I didn't get to talk to anybody about it the other day. I wish I would have gotten to talk to Doyson, but he was busy. It looks like, you know, with him at the back of the bullpen, they're going to ride that. And yeah, you got to give the starters credit. I think they had 15 of 17 of the wins that they had in that stretch, up through Thursday's games, last Thursday's games. So, conversely, the Marines hit a rough patch. You know, at one point they started out the first seven games. They were 1-4-2 after the All-Star break. That coincides
with fallen from first.
They're still in second place, but you know, everybody's close now. Everybody's like in that 41-42 win area, and everybody's within striking distance. And I did get to talk to Bobby Scales the other day on Monday, and he said, "Look, all the teams are beating up on each other," and they're at the bottom. I mean, obviously the Buffalo's at the bottom, but any team makes a good run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can be on top if they can put it together, but
yeah, they finally snapped that losing streak on Sunday night.
Who's that?
Lotte.
Ah, yes, they did. Yeah, they came back. They came from behind.
Yeah, it was a comeback victory. I was watching it in the afternoon.
Yeah, Teo Okada hits a 3-run homer to put the Buffaloes on top. I think that was in the fifth inning, and they toughed it out. I think Salvador Omura had a single,
mm-hmm.
3-run single to give them the lead back, and then they held off the fighting Buffaloes.
Yeah, wasn't the starter, wasn't that his first start? Some kid I'd never seen before.
Oh, for the Marines.
For the Marines,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, it was. Nakago.
Nakago.
It was
okay.
His first start, and he was gone pretty early. 4 innings, I believe, mm-hmm. He was gone. How does that work? I didn't really get to see the game.
They called him out for the hero interview, and he even said he wasn't expected to be out there.
Oh. No, I think they called out Minami, the guy who actually won the game. He came on in relief.
Okay.
I did see. I mean, I had the game on. It was in the corner of my eye. We had the Olympic stuff going on, and, you know, it was busy at work. But I did see that, Minami came up.
You're right. It was Minami.
And he got the win. He threw an inning and a third scoreless innings. Where he gave up a couple walks.
Yeah, before Yabuta came out.
And then the Yabuta came out, and yeah, they Masuda, the rookie, closed the game out, which he did with a perfect knife. So, yeah, they have fallen back. They hit a rough patch, and teams are going to have rough patches. And I discussed this with Jim on the show when we were taping at Cebu Dome, and mm-hmm. how I like guys who can hit for power, but you know, we don't see a lot of that throughout the Pacific League. And what we do see with the Marines is that they have a lot of guys who get on base.
Mm-hmm.
And that sometimes you can knock them in, and sometimes they're just going to be left out there. And they got them home today, and that got mm-hmm. them the win. But just getting on base, I mean, you know, they don't hit for a lot of power. So I think a lot of teams are going to – I think this Pacific League race is going to be great. I think it's going to go down to the very end, perhaps the last pitch of the entire season. You know,
all six teams,
all three games are going to be important and set, you know, on the last day and set the playoff seedings. That's my prediction. That last pitch,
okay.
That last game of the Pacific League will say, you know, it could be that some team goes from a potential first place spot to a potential third place spot on that last pitch. Wouldn't that be great?
That would be great. And you know, the Pacific League has given us this sort of thing over and over again since the playoff system has started.
Yeah, it's been really great to watch. But I think this year in particular, and simply in my opinion, it's just that the teams are so closely matched. I mean, there aren't a lot of teams that have power. I mean, the Fighters seems like they have more power. But Nakata, you know, he's been, you know, he changed his batting form. Did you hear about that? I mean, he used to do the squatting, no-step batting stance, mm-hmm. and now he's picking up his leg and trying to get his foot down quickly and time pitchers, and he's still making an adjustment in that. I think it's not.
Yeah, he started off not even hitting 200, but over the past couple of months, he's really raised his average a great deal, and he is starting to hit for power.
Yeah, starting to hit for power. He's not consistent with the power, but I think that's the team that has the most power. It's too bad Sledge is not coming back because he gave him some pop.
Yeah.
But I like that team. I like what they can do. Did you see that they sent Yuki Saito down to the farm?
Yeah, I saw that. And then he lost to a Ixei team. He lost to the what's that Ixei team called? There's a special name for it.
I forgot. I tweeted it when it happened, and I did. I just laughed it off. I thought, well, he won't be coming back for a while, but because that's a real blow. Remember, I was saying they were coddling him and giving him royal jelly treatment and trying to tell him how good he was, and we kept saying, you know, he's just an average guy. And then I had that rant about him starting game one of the All-Star game, thinking, and then this happens. It's just, I just laughed. I had nothing else I could do except laugh, but it's too bad for him. I think, you know, we don't think Bobby Keppel's coming back this year. So their pitching staff, Brian Wolfe has been good. Takeda's been outstanding. Masaru. And
yeah, well, both Takeda's.
Well, I don't know about Takeda. He's been good. Right. I don't know about outstanding, but he's been good. He's been getting the job done, which is all you need to get done. And then Atsunori Inaba is back and healthy, and I don't know. I like what this team is doing. Yodai Kan, I really like him. Yoshio Itoi, we've talked about how much I like him. I like this team, you know, to go places, but they got to get that pitching in order, and I'm not so confident on that side. Although they seem to be getting the job done, so they lost. They had a game today where they had a 3-run lead and they couldn't keep it. The Eagles came back and tied them and finished in a tie. But I hope we're looking at a terrific finish. What do you think about the Central League now?
Central League seems to be all Giants now. The Giants have just waken up and have plowed right through everybody.
Is that a Sleeping Giants reference, Mike?
I think that that's what it's. It was becoming midway through what I was saying.
Yeah, I think, you know, they opened a gap that was 6 games this past week. It's 4 and a half now, I believe, but
they just
seems like they're
gonna... Stars.
Yeah,
We actually were competitive one game.
The game on Sunday night was really good. In fact,
Sunday, yeah, Miura gave up 2.
Yeah, and we'll get to this later when we talk about the counts again. But I was really surprised after talking to Nami-chan, Alex Ramirez, who said he normally lets the first pitch go by, and he swung at a first pitch tonight. And I've been, you know, well, we'll talk about this later, but
grounded into a double play
on a pitch that why are you swinging at that? There's really not much you could do with it. I mean, that was
I was also paying attention to first swings or first pitches.
Yeah, so I didn't get that, but the Giants are starting to pull away from people, and they're going to make it boring. I think it's going to be, you know, once we get through August here in September, I think they're going to hit the gas pedal and just, you know, streak to the end. But I think the real race is going to be for third place in this thing, because the Swallows have just been beset by injuries. I mean, Coco Valentin, he's gone. Tony Barnett, they both say that they think they're going to be back quickly. But the reports I saw in the newspaper, one of them was saying that maybe Coco might not be back this year, which I can't believe. The way he's, you know, I watch him on Twitter. I follow him on Twitter, and the way he's talking, he's going to be back soon. And Tony said the same thing, that he's going to be back after the minimum 10 days. But the newspaper reports had them out longer than that. But they're getting enough contributions from the other guys to stay right there. They did drop into fourth place, and which brings us to the Carp.
Hiroshima has been on fire.
Yeah. And
they swept Hanshin this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Which is helpful for us. I tell you, we've got that Tiger. Tiger tail is just within reach there.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking. Is they keep, well, the Tigers keep falling like this. It's going to give the Bay Stars a chance to climb out of the cellar at the end of the season. I think the last 2 months are going to tell us everything. Anywhere, the last 6 weeks, I should say. So they're pretty close. So I think obviously Yokohama's got to beat Hanshin when they play head to head. Other than that, I think the rest of the other teams in the league are going to have their way with both teams. So. Head-to-head, if they can get it to, you know, within 3 or 4 games heading into September, it'd be nice to watch that, because they're going to get their chances to play each other. The Dragons, to me, look like a playoff team. They're second place.
Oh, definitely.
But they sent Hitoki Iwase to the farm. Apparently, the article I think I read in Hochi Shimbun said at his request because he wanted to go down and work on some things.
I've seen a couple different reports. Of course, Chunichi does what they always do, and they say he went down for readjustment, which is basically saying, we're not going to tell you why we sent him down.
Yeah.
But I've seen something saying that he's been having stiffness in his arm or elbow. I'm not sure which one it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I have seen that report, and there was a different part of his body. I thought it was his lower body.
Yeah, he's long since had back issues, so he might might be flaring up. So that's something that could go out at any time with him. But I was surprised to see that it was at his request. You know, he's blown some games here. He's blown some save opportunities. He's messed up some games. But everybody's been taking their turn. But they're getting by. I mean, they're getting by with young guys. Today it was Yamauchi, who's got 9 wins now. Where does that come from? We were expecting Kenshin Kawakami to come back to Japan and post 9 wins or 10 wins or
Kawakami
something.
Kawakami hasn't been quite on that pace yet.
Oh,
but
God, no. He has been awful. And I don't think
it
he's...
It looks like they're just having him throw one game and go down to the farm for 10 and...
Yeah, I think that's probably...
10 days rest and...
That's probably good for him. But I'm interested to see if these carp can keep it up, and I would like to see it happening. And we talked about it.
There's some real serious red flags with the carp.
Yes.
The biggest one is they have a losing record against everybody but Yokohama.
That's really
against bad. Yokohama, they're 12-2.
They're killing Yokohama. Yeah.
That's where all of their over 500 is coming from.
Yeah. What are they? There are 2 games over 500, I believe, as of Sunday, after Sunday's win.
That's just something that kind of makes me think they don't quite have it all. Oh, I guess they are 6-6 against Hanshin now.
Yeah, they have an even record. But the other red flag, Shota Dobayashi, maybe? The guy with 22 errors at third base?
Oh.
Now, we were looking...
You know, You mentioned that earlier, and I looked it up, and sure enough, he's got almost twice as many errors as anybody else.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to find out. I tried to do a quick search before we started taping, but I can't find it. What the record for a season, I guess at least for third baseman, for errors, because 22, I think he could reach 30 at third base this season. That's got to be a record. But we'll look it up, see if we can find that. We'll put Jim Allen on the job. I think he can find it really quickly. And that's hurting them.
Yeah.
That's getting into the territory where, you know, if it's just about 20 over the course of a season, that's bad. But we can live with that because he's hitting so well.
Uh-huh.
We can't live with 20. You're killing us now.
Yeah, well, Carp's ERA is below 3 thanks to that, even though they're giving up more runs than they've scored.
Yeah, the ERA might be lower, but you're still giving up runs, and those will end up costing you games. Now, your ERA might look better, but your win-loss record is going to take a hit in that respect. I don't know. We'll have to see. It looks really interesting. I think that fight for third place and that last playoff spot is going to be interesting. The Swallows, like I said, beset by injuries. Once they get everybody back and healthy, I think they're going to play well again, and they'll be right there. So it'll be interesting to see if the Carp can hold on. But I like their pitching. I really like their pitching. I've said it from the start.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be pulling for them. At least I will.
Well, after moving into the new stadium, they needed to rebuild the team. And I think that they're starting to get there.
And they're building it the right way with arms. You know, if they can get some people who can, maybe they'll have to move Dobayashi to the outfield at some point, maybe left field, and get a real third baseman or somebody who can catch the ball and throw the ball a little bit better.
Uh-huh.
Stabilize that infield. I really like them. I think they're going to be around for a while with that pitching staff. So. All right, now let's move on to our next topic, which is we were going to discuss a follow-up from last week's show about the counts.
Mm-hmm.
And you did some more research. And, you know, a long time ago I talked to Rick Short. Remember him? He played, started with the Lotte Marines. He went back to the States, and then he came and played with the Eagles for a handful of years.
Uh-huh.
And he told me once when he was looking at players, he wanted to see how they hit with two strikes.
Oh, okay.
To see how they do and everything. And we obviously we found last week that a lot of production was coming on the first pitch. So that's not with two strikes.
No.
But we did want to take a look and see what people are doing on the first pitch instead of just talk about the numbers overall. Let's talk about who's doing what on the first pitch and what did you find.
Okay, well, the first thing I did was I just kind of created some summaries to get an idea of on the first pitch, is it a ball, is it a strike, is it put into play?
Mm-hmm.
And overall, you've got somewhere between 39 and 41% first pitch balls. More often than not, it's a strike. That's anywhere from 46 to 47%. And this is consistent from 2009 to 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And then balls being put into play, that kind of makes up the rest of it, which is somewhere around 12%, kind of high 11, low 12%. So first pitch, more often than not, a strike, pretty even a ball. And about 12% of the time, somebody is putting that ball into play.
Now, you're going to post this on the internet again like we did last week with the table so that people can follow along if they want to listen?
Yes, I definitely am. So,
so please,
you are now listening, go to JapaneseBaseball.com to John's page, and there will be a link there
in the
when
podcast
this goes up.
Post, I'll put it in there so you guys can follow along and Michael has access and has written a computer program. Is that the right wording? I don't know.
Yes.
I don't speak geekish, but and he has looked at all of the pitches from 2009 to 2000. So far, I guess this is still through the All-Star break.
Well, this is actually through yesterday.
Through Saturday's game.
Or through Saturday, yes.
And he has compiled a lot of the data so that we can look at it, and he's put it in a PDF file that you can look at. So take a look there and try to follow along because there are a lot of numbers flying around out there, and it's hard.
Yeah.
If you're out jogging, which is what I do when I listen to podcasts, it's pretty hard to follow along. But
And having listened to some of my guest appearances – and all of those numbers, even I was getting confused. So I'm starting to understand why it is that people don't want to say a lot of numbers on the radio.
Yeah, it's harder to follow along. But, yeah, what else did you find? Now, who were the players who were being really productive or who had a lot of production on those first pitches?
Okay, well, actually, one more summary.
Oh, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Almost, 2009 and 2010, about 46.5% of all first pitches were fastballs.
Uh-huh.
This kind of came as a surprise to me. After that, it went slider, and then it kind of went curve, fork, changeup. All of these are kind of intermixed and not much difference, and all less than 10%, so not much variation.
Yeah, now when you talk about a first pitch fastball, we're not necessarily saying that it's in the strike zone.
So right, it's not necessarily a strike.
That's right. It might be a first pitch fastball, but maybe they're throwing it to get guys to swing and miss. Maybe they're trying to get guys to swing and, you know, I know that guys throw an inside fastball to have somebody hit it foul and get a strike.
In fact, first pitches, only 48% of them were strikes, actually more than that, because 13% or 14% were put into play. So
this year?
That's all 4 years, pretty much.
So
all of this
three and a half
pretty
seasons,
consistent.
So. Yeah.
Although the past 2 years, first pitch fastballs have slowly increased 48 and 49%, almost half of all first pitches since the new ball was introduced are fastballs.
Yeah, and before the show we talked about that, and I said, well, maybe guys are using the fastballs to set up other pitches because a year and a half ago, Matt Merton was saying that the fork balls have a little bit more movement with these new balls, and that's something that he noticed. So if you throw a fastball and guys see fastball, they're going to swing because if they recognize fastball, they're going to take a hack at it because they don't want to hit the other stuff. It's too hard. It's moving too much.
Right.
So that could be one of the reasons.
And also, some people like Darvish have said that they had more confidence in their fastball with the new ball as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I think that all has something to do with it. But let's look at batters.
Yeah, let's see who is doing what now. Who is doing the most damage on these first pitches now?
Let's see. Valentin, Blanco, and Millage. Is it Millage or Millage?
You know it's Millage. You listen to the show. He was on the show earlier this year. You're killing me. You're killing me, West Bay.
I
you forgot.
Was
he's a
before
knuckle-swell.
The podcast and after the podcast. Which one was it? Okay. Millage.
No problem. Yeah, Millage.
These three have been consistently hitting the most first pitches over the fence. Valentin has had 7 first pitch home runs, Blanco 6, and Millage so far this season 4 mm-hmm. first pitch homers.
Through Saturday's games.
So these three being in the lineup, especially the Yakult duo, they go after early pitches and they hit them pretty hard.
Okay.
Both Valentin and Blanco have a slugging percentage over 1 for the first pitch.
Right, over 1,000. Wow. And the thing that I noticed was that the guy with the most hits first pitch is Ryo Hijirizawa of the Rakuten Eagles with 23.
Yeah, 23 hits and a 418
418
batting
average. Yeah, which is also pretty high. The guy with the highest average I saw was Vladimir Valentin, so that's good for him. At least he's getting those first pitch, you know, he's hitting them hard, he's getting the ball in play, he's getting the ball in the field, he's making things happen, he's not just swinging at them.
Also, Lotte's Kakunaka has been doing very well with first pitches, and although he hasn't really been swinging at that many of them, mm-hmm. so he might do better by swinging at more first pitches. Whereas on the other side of the stats, Yokohama's Nakamura has done extremely poorly when he hits the first pitch. So I'm thinking that maybe he should lay off a few of those. And the thing is that Nakamura is in the top 10 in batting average in the Central League right now.
Yeah. Well, just think of what he could do if he knew this information.
He's hitting 200 on the first pitch.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to go there. No. let's see. Jim's favorite player, Yokun.
Yodaikon, yeah.
He strikes out an awful lot on the if he takes the first pitch or swings and misses the first pitch.
So if the Nippon Ham Fighters center fielder, he should be swinging at the first pitch, you're saying, try to put it in play?
He'd probably be better off putting it in play than he would be watching a first strike go by.
Watching the first strike.
He has had 175 first pitch strikes compared to 60 first pitch balls in play, on which he's batting almost 400, by the way.
Yeah.
So if he puts that first pitch in play, almost 400. If he swings and misses or watches it go by, he struck out 60 times.
All right, so one more guy, and then we'll move on to the questions.
Well, how about a quartet?
Okay.
Seibu's Nakajima, Nippon Ham's Itoi, Chunichi's Wada, and Yomiuri's Sakamoto are all batting over 300 if the first pitch is a strike.
So they get one strike on them,
and then
their batting average blows up all of them across the board, huh?
Yeah, so, you know, that's kind of counterintuitive, but these guys, they can take a strike.
And if Ramirez would have taken a strike tonight, I think there would have been a different situation for the Yokohama Bay Stars. Like I said earlier, he came on the show and he talked about, he said, I think about 70% of the time, and if you look at these numbers, I think he's right about 70% of the time, he takes the first pitch. And I think it was because he was going up against the Giants and he knew the pitcher, and mm-hmm. they knew that he takes a lot of first pitches. They were trying to throw a strike, but they disguised it really well. I don't know. It might have been at the bottom of the strike zone. I think it was a strike.
Okay.
But I don't think he needed to swing at it. There was really nothing he could do with that thing.
He is batting .326 when he does make contact with the first pitch. So tonight is just, you know, one of those two-thirds that's an out.
Pick a better pitch. That's all we got to say.
Yeah.
All right, thanks a lot for that, Mike. Appreciate you.
Okay, it was a fun study.
All right, let's go to fielding questions. So we had one comment on the Facebook page, and again, it was from Claudio, our buddy up in Toronto, and he said, do you think NPB will or should take any disciplinary measures against Shun Yamaguchi, the DeNA BayStars closer. I don't think he did it on purpose, but in less than a month, he is injured and sent to the DL for at least a month. Two different players, Tony Blanco of the Chunichi Dragons and Tsubasa Aizawa of the Hiroshima Carp. I believe both batters took way too long to get out of the way in both cases, but still, how many injured players do we need to see from him before he gets a warning, a suspension, or some sort of penalty? So I was watching that game, and I saw mm-hmm. the ambulance come on and everything, and I saw that they were not moving Aizawa on the...
Right. They had brought a stretcher out, and they sent the stretcher trainer over. Said no, sent it back, and wait for the professional paramedics to bring him out.
Yeah, they didn't want to run and have... I guess they were concerned about his neck. And I when we watched the replays, it looked like it hit the top of his helmet.
Yeah.
Not hit him flush in the face. But these, you know, the thing I was thinking was, these helmets, they must be cracked. Because the thing cracked.
Uh-huh.
First of all, it cracked. And it didn't hit him flush. It hit the helmet. But still, yeah. It broke the nose bone. The top of the nose bone, and he had bleeding through the nose and mouth and all that stuff, and it was pretty bad, and mm-hmm. I don't know what it was pretty bad. It was pretty frightening to watch and see the replays and all that stuff, and the game was stopped. I mentioned it on my blog that they stopped it for almost 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. But I don't think Yamaguchi hit the guys on purpose. I think he has the pitch inside because He throws a lot of fastballs, and he's got to mm-hmm. keep guys off of his fastball, and the only way he can do it is to pitch inside, back him off the plate.
Right.
I think he just has to. And he has not been that effective anyway. If he doesn't do that, he's not going to be effective at all.
Yeah, I kind of... a dark joke. I said the only good thing about that hit batter was that Yamaguchi had to get out of there before he allowed more damage. Okay. I can be criticized for that dark joke. But,
yeah, it is dark, but I mean, you're right in a sense. I know that I've gotten some emails from you during some games a number of times. Like, this guy's not our closer, and why is he in there, and when they're going to give up on him? But he's the best they have at throwing hard and getting and intimidating guys, mm-hmm. which is... And that's why he's back there, I believe. And if he can't do that, he's got no chance, like I said.
Right.
I don't think he's hitting anybody on purpose. I don't know that the league will discipline or fine or anything.
I think the answer came out yesterday. He came in the ninth inning. BayStars were down by a ton. But Nakahata Kantoku said he wanted to get him out there on the mound again, put this behind him. And the very first pitch that he threw to Sakamoto was a fastball inside. So he basically came out and showed that he is going to continue throwing inside to batters.
Yeah, that's who he is. That's what he does. Hopefully he can get a little bit better control.
Yeah, he could use a little more control, and I certainly hope that he doesn't hit anybody else. The Blanco incident, as I recall... I remember him check swinging or starting to swing and the ball hitting him on the back of the hand.
Yeah. Yeah. I had the same recollection that he was moving. He was diving in at a pitch that just happened to be on the inside of the plate and he couldn't get out of the way.
Right. Well, he thought that it was going to be a good pitch initially.
Well, he thinks every pitch is going to be good.
Oh, okay.
Let's get that.
That could be...
the only way you can really walk the guy is if you roll the ball up there four times. I'm sorry, did I interrupt you? Go ahead.
Okay.
He thought the pitch was going to be a strike.
Yeah, I really don't think that Yamaguchi is throwing at people. And if he's not really throwing at people, there really is no need to suspend him or penalize him in any way.
And the suspension, the penalty comes immediately and swiftly in games in Japan where you just get ejected. See you later.
It's an automatic ejection.
It's automatic. Yes. So I think that's enough. If he hits enough people, maybe they might issue some kind of a warning to him, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Send him to a second camp. but you know he felt bad about it when he left.
Yeah. Certainly did.
When you injure somebody, you can't be human and not feel something.
Yeah. Definitely. I saw the expression on his face. It was concern, and it was sadness, and it was remorse, and it was immediate. And I think he feels badly about it. But hopefully Aizawa's going to be all right. We'll try to report on him next time on the next show.
And you can also look back in history, and there are many Herald pitchers who are very well known for hitting batters, and they often did it on purpose. Yeah. Let's see. Hoshino Kantoku, when he was a pitcher, he was a fiery, I'll hit anybody kind of pitcher. Higashi Oh, Seibu Lions, a longtime pitcher. I believe, has he been inducted in the Hall of Fame yet? Or I know his name comes up, but he was also Seibu's manager for a while. And he's well known for hitting a lot of batters. I think he was, at one point, the dead ball king on the mound.
The hit batter king. Well, yeah.
And going farther back in history, there are more who seriously, deliberately hit a lot of batters. Yamaguchi, nah, he's not known for deliberately hitting batters.
And let's hope he doesn't hit anybody again. Not for a while. All right, Claudio, thank you very much for putting that on the Facebook page. We appreciate it. And thank you to Michael Westbay for sitting in for Jim this week. We enjoyed having you on.
And I've enjoyed being here.
So a reminder, you can send us your comments or questions via MP3 file to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we'll play them or address them on the show. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Take care.